The relationship between understanding the three modes and liberation and how speculating about the three modes actually can lead us to devotional service. Three modes leads to liberation, or how the three modes leads understanding, knowledge of the three modes leads to liberation, or how speculating about the information content of this chapter actually can lead one to devotional service. Amazing. Because we're usually told, don't speculate. But here, speculation will lead one to devotional service. How is that? How does knowledge of the modes lead to liberation? Yeah, that's what it says right here. If one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. Anyway, it's an interesting thought. There's actually also more than one point, actually, and I will explain some of them right now. Because we have to move on with the class. Page 682 in my book, top of the page. And we're going to read a little bit from that, a little more from that purport, the purport to verse text 1. So at the in the 13th chapter, a lot of information has been disclosed. The soul, the super soul, the body, the process of liberation, and the soul's entanglement in the material world. And how the material manifestation, the material world, is a mixture of the soul and the material elements. Now, if we remember specifically, we learned about the field of activities of the living entity. And pretty much, he was trapped in there, in this field of activities. And his existence was simply limited to the particular nature of his trap. If he had a dog's body, the trap might be like this. And if he had another body, it has a different shape. But it's limited. And not only that, he transmigrates. Kananam guna sangasya sada sad joni janmasu. The living entity translates to different encasements again and again and again, according to the modes of material nature, sangha, his association with the modes of material nature. He's transmigrating. Now, what a difficult predicament to be in. The living entity is trapped in this material world, transmigrating, with almost no hope to get out. How did he get in there? What is the nature of that trap? And of course, ultimately, looking at it from a different angle, how to get out. So this chapter describes in the three sections, if we look at our, if everyone can take a look at their chapter 14 summary sheet, we see the first section is the conditioning and liberation of the living entity. This section explains how the living entity was placed within the trap of the material world, and those bars in the second section, the ropes of material nature, the binding forces of material nature, how they condition the living entity. That's described in the second chapter, in the second section, description of the three modes and the results of their association, the nature of his conditioning and entanglement. First section, how he's placed in. Second section, the nature of his trap. And the third section is transcending the modes, how to get out. Not only how to get out, we'll go into detail, that's only part of it, but how to transcend. Now, there is one minor mistake. In section C, part 2 at the end, when it lists the verses, it should be 21 through 25 instead of 22 through 25. Section C, part 2, where it says 22 22 through 25. It should be 21 through 25. You see that? Okay. So now, how the living entity gets trapped. The key verse, and it's been mentioned in many places throughout the prior chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, is the modes of material nature. That's 13:22. Because Krishna has explained in that the living entity, according to his association with the modes of material nature, he takes on different bodies. So now Krishna is going to explain the potency and conditioning power and ultimately the liberation from these modes of material nature, which are the binding force in the material world. Text 1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Again I shall declare to you this supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection." Now we're going to read this purport. From the 7th chapter to the end of the 12th chapter, Sri Krishna in detail reveals the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now the Lord Himself is further enlightening Arjuna. If one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. In the 13th chapter, it was clearly explained that by humbly developing knowledge, one may possibly be freed from material entanglement. It has also been explained that it is due to association with the modes of nature that the living entity is entangled in this material world. Now, in this chapter, the Supreme Personality explains what those modes of nature are, how they act, how they bind, and how they give liberation. The knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Supreme Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. Again, more superior, more superior, more superior. Very interesting. Because, as Prabhupada said early in the purport, from the 7th chapter to the end of the 12th chapter, Sri Krishna in detail reveals the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now this knowledge is more superior. By understanding this knowledge, various great sages attained perfection and transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord now explains the same knowledge in a better way. This knowledge is far, far superior to all other processes of knowledge thus far explained. And knowing this, many attain perfection. Thus, it is expected that one who understands this 14th chapter will attain perfection. So this should give us some impetus to enter into the mysteries of the 14th chapter and thus exit from the entanglement of the three modes of material nature. Second verse, by becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. So what chapter had another reference to that almost infinitely long day of creation and night of dissolution of the material world? And if one understands this knowledge, one gets out of that. Maita Vipul? Chapter 8, very good. Now Krishna is going to explain this entanglement, how the soul got encased in this material nature. The total material substance, called Brahman, is the source of birth. And it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings, O son of Bharata. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. So the Lord, by his potent glance, impregnates the living entities within the womb of the material nature. And then once in that womb of material nature, what happens? Material nature, text 5, consists of three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, he becomes conditioned by these modes. It is not all living entities who become conditioned by the modes of material nature, but there is a qualification for being conditioned by them. Or to look at it from another point of view, a disqualification from being free, liberated. And that mentality that one has to have that gets him entangled in the modes of material nature, placed within the material world, is that he wants to enjoy. The root cause of that is the misuse of his free will and his envy of Krishna. Instead of Krishna being Bhoktaram, the living entity is thinking, Ishwaraham Maham Bhoghi, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. And therefore, he's placed by Krishna within the prison house of the material world. And the bars or the binding elements of this prison house are explained in text 5. Material nature consists of three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, O mighty Om Darjun, he becomes conditioned or controlled by these modes. Sattva, Raja, Tama, the three modes of material nature. So this first section is like a prelude to the other sections of the other two sections in this chapter. How the soul becomes conditioned by the material energy. Section B. Now, there are eight numbers in section B. We've divided them, I've titled them, not on this paper, but I'll explain them to you, and then we'll get a feeling for how the kind of thing that Krishna is explaining. Section 1, 2, and 3, one after another, explains the conditioning of the three modes of nature. Excuse me, this is, I'm talking about in part B. How the modes condition the living entity, each of the three modes. Then in 4, which is verse 9, there's a summary of that. Then in 6, which is verse 11 through 13, three verses, the different manifestations, how the modes manifest themselves within an individual. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Just a point, a specific point on the interactions of the modes. 6 is how the modes manifest themselves through an individual. 7, the result of death when one is controlled by one or another of the modes. The results of death in one or another of the modes. And 8, which is 16 through 18, the results of action within the modes. If one gets a clear understanding of the modes of material nature, he begins to see that everyone is completely controlled. He begins to see people acting, thinking that it's their free will, thinking that they are free, but actually completely encased and bound up by the modes of material nature. Because everywhere, there's nothing in existence that in this material world that's free from the actions of the three modes. We'll start reading this section, which is the basic information on the three modes of material nature and how they control or condition a living entity. When we say condition, a simple way to understand condition, what we mean by we say a conditioned living entity is that he's controlled. A controlled living entity controlled by the three modes of material nature. Did you want to mention something?
When someone is a transcendentalist, the person is
transcendentalist,
so it is considered to be beyond the modes of nature,
but
he has got a desire to enjoy
and
become one
as
the Lord.
So therefore, vimukti maninas, that means he's liberated only in his mind.
But how can we see in terms of the modes?
How is someone
beyond, beyond the modes.
But he can't stay beyond the modes. That's the difficulty.
So it's temporarily beyond the modes.
So Prabhupada said that to me once.
Said
what? That, if you just give me a second, I'll explain it. He said that the great impersonalists, they say everything is illusion, but then because they are active by nature, they have to be active because the nature of the soul is active, so therefore they're forced to act in one of the modes of material nature because they're not qualified to engage in spiritual activity. So temporarily, one may think that one may even be on the platform of liberation, but he has to act. He has to act. Therefore, yene ravindakshava mukti maninas. That they come down again. They have to come down again. So Prabhupada said they must come down. They must come down from that platform because they need a realm to act on. So when specifically asked, why must the impersonalist come down from Brahman, he said, because they get lonely. You need somewhere to act, something to relate to. This is the nature of the soul. And then, as soon as you have an enjoying spirit, the slightest tinge of anything other than pure devotional service, immediately bound up by the modes of material nature. Text 6. O sinless one, the mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating. And it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. So that was Janmastami's answer. That one tends to get knowledge when one cultivates the mode of goodness. And from knowledge, as the 13th chapter described, one can get liberated. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings. O son of Kunti, and because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material fruit of actions. O son of Bharata, know that the mode of darkness, born of ignorance, is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned souls. O son of Bharata, the mode of goodness conditions one to happiness. Here's the summary. Passion conditions one to fruit of activities, and ignorance, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. If one was in a pure state of goodness, one would be able to surrender to the supersoul, and go back home, back to Godhead. But when one is contaminated by goodness, one is too satisfied to do what Krishna says. When one is contaminated by the mode of passion, his own desires are speaking too loudly to hear the voice of his dear friend, the Supersoul. And when one is contaminated by the mode of ignorance, he's too inert, ignorant, crazy, and mad to hear the Supersoul. He's hearing too many other voices from here and there. So in this way, the modes of nature condition the living entity and keep him satisfied and seeking pleasure within the different encasements of the material world. Sometimes, here's just that point, which is it's text 10, but where is it there? Number 5. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the mode of modes of passion and ignorance, O son of Bharata. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance, and at other times ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy. Now the next section, the manifestations of the modes, how they exhibit themselves. The manifestation of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge, O chief of the Bharatas. When there's an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. When there's an increase in the mode of ignorance, O son of Kuru, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifest. Then, So one should be able to place himself and figure out pretty well his combination of modes that affect him. Sometimes at different times of the day, one mode or another will push us. The mode of goodness is prominent during Brahma Muhurta hours, so therefore we're recommended to get up and make spiritual advancement. Once the sun starts blazing, everyone's blood starts boiling and the mode of passion takes over for a while, and ignorance and fighting one another. Sometimes one is in goodness and feeling very self-satisfied, and then he meets someone who puts him right in the mode of passion, or just suddenly gets real sleepy into the mode of ignorance like that, and fighting one another for supremacy like that, pushing the living entity, controlling them in different ways. When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains to the pure higher planets of the great sages. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth amongst those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. So now, the results of actions in the mode. So it's a quite a thorough description of how the modes of material nature control those in the material world and how they push them, what their destinations are going to be, like that. The results of pious action is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery, and action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. So we see, sometimes we crank ourselves up into the mode of passion to do our service, and we get it done, but after a while we get some reaction because we did it in passion, and there's some miserable reaction because we didn't do it perfectly. We distribute books in the mode of passion, and we get the service done, and Prabhupada wanted his books distributed without a doubt, but we do it in such a way that the people are very upset. And later on, there's a reaction for that. Or we do it in ignorance, in some foolish, mad way. But if we do it in goodness, must do it, but in doing it in goodness, then the result is knowledge for ourselves and for others. 17. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. See, one leads to the other. You act and there's a continuing chain. And from the mode of ignorance develops foolishness, madness, and illusion. More on the results. 18. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. Now, starting with 19 through 27 in section C, we've divided it into three parts. These three parts, keep aware, I'm going to read all three parts now, and keep aware of the different processes of liberation and transcending these modes that are mentioned in these three parts. The first part, okay, well, I'll just read these two verses. When one properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and he knows that the Supreme Lord who is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. When the embodied being is able to transcend these modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life. So then Arjuna inquires, Oh my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of nature? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed So all these reactions to the material qualities remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. The symptoms of one who has transcended. So, can you imagine trying to transcend looking upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards desirable and undesirable, who is steady, situated equally both well in praise and blame? Can you imagine, even imagine transcending these things if one is not in the mode of goodness? Is it possible to transcend if you have uncontrollable desires? Will it be possible to be equally situated when confronted with the desirable and undesirable, praise and blame? Impossible. What to speak of the mode of ignorance? From the mode of passion, it's impossible. So to actually transcend, one must be in the mode of goodness. At least. And then he can transcend. Not that the mode of goodness is an end in itself, but one cannot transcend from the other modes. Now, in this regard, there's an essay that I had written a few years ago in this book. I think it's the first one after the summary. Maybe, no, it's maybe the last one after the summary. Yeah, page 45, called Elevation to Goodness. There's more information about this particular point that one must be in the mode of goodness to transcend the modes of material nature. Try and read it tonight. It's an important point because devotees sometimes think that they are transcendental to the modes of material nature. I'm a devotee, I'm transcendental. But unfortunately, it's not so easy to be transcendental. That's your humility, Prabhu. So also, I'll tie this up a little bit later. But note that the key in this, if you could sum up the symptoms in one thing, in one word, could you sum up the symptoms or the qualities that are mentioned here as the symptoms of one who is transcended in one word?
Equanimity?
Yeah, equanimity. Or detachment. Now these qualities of transcendence are also if we read the process of knowledge in that we read in Bhagavad Gita 13:8, humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evils of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and undulated devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, acceptance of the importance of self-realization, and also the consciousness of one situated in knowledge from the fifth chapter, we can see that they're all very, very similar. Yeah, right. Looking on pebbles, and it's also summed up again in the 18th chapter. Because the basic point about liberation and freedom from the modes of material nature and knowledge is to be detached from the pushings and the entanglement of these three modes of material nature. And to do that, one has to give up his enjoying spirit. The enjoying mood is that which attaches us to the modes of material nature. That's the key, the glue to us in the material world. So therefore, we have to become the servant. And therefore, accepting the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master as our shelter is 100% essential, because we need someone to serve. Because if we're not serving, we're thinking ourselves the master. And if we think ourselves the master, immediately the modes of material nature, we have no hope to transcend. But thinking myself a servant, being completely obedient to my spiritual master, to his order, therefore the modes may be telling one thing, modes may be saying this, may take that, desire that, but no. Even though the modes are pushing me, I'm surrendered to my spiritual master, therefore liberated. So the second part of this section C was the symptoms, and the third part is more on how to transcend, 26 and 27. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcend the modes of material nature, and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So there's different processes. There's the process of knowledge, which brings us gradually to this platform of equanimity, and which was described last time in Jnana Yoga. It brings us to this platform, but one who engages in full devotional service without falling down, bhakti yogena sevate, immediately, automatically transcends, because he's serving Krishna. So therefore he's not serving the modes. So therefore it's the direct process. And he thus comes to the level of Brahman. Immediately comes to this Brahman level, where the modes of material nature are not pushing him in. He's on the spiritual platform, which is the real platform that devotional service takes place on. And Krishna says in the last verse of this chapter, and I am the basis of that impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So this is the basic platform. This Brahman is the basic transcendental platform on which pure devotional service takes place. We should note also that 13.13 I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. This is the platform that all that knowledge, the vision of one who has applied the process of knowledge and who sees the Supersoul, this is the platform on which all spiritual realization takes place. The Brahman, this platform, the spiritual platform beyond the modes of material nature. 13.13. Now I'd just like to read a summary of this. 14.26. I think it's 14.27. The living entity, although Brahman by nature, has the desire to lord it over the material world. And due to this, he falls down. This is on page 709 in this edition, in the purport to 14.27. In his constitutional position, a living entity is above the three modes of material nature. But association with material nature entangles him in the different modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Due to the association of these three modes, his desire to dominate the material world is there. By engagement in devotional service, in full Krishna consciousness, he's immediately situated in the transcendental position, and his unlawful desire to control material nature is removed. Therefore, the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing, chanting, remembering, The prescribed nine methods for realizing devotional service should be practiced in the association of devotees. Gradually, by such association, by the influence of the spiritual master, one's material desire to dominate is removed. One cannot become advanced unless he gives up this desire to dominate. And one becomes firmly situated in the Lord's transcendental loving service. This method is prescribed from the 22nd to the last verse of this chapter. Devotional service to the Lord is very simple. One should always engage in the service of the Lord, eat the remnants of foodstuffs offered to the deity, smell the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, see the places where the Lord had his transcendental pastimes, read of the different activities of the Lord, his reciprocation of love with his devotees, and chant always the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, and observe the fasting days commemorating the appearances and disappearance of the Lord and his devotees. By following such a process, one becomes completely detached from all material activities. One who can thus situate himself in the Brahma Jyoti, or the different varieties of the Brahman conception, is equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in quality. All pure devotional service takes place on this Brahman platform. And the Brahman platform means the spiritual platform beyond the control of the three modes of material nature. Okay. Let me just look at one more thing and then I'll call for questions. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Devaki, and then we'll go this way. Oh, I was going to ask you questions. Just what is this C section? It's on transcending, it seems. I don't have any quick summary for that. But it's how to transcend. What one must understand from his knowledge of the modes of material nature, and the result of that is transcending. Aniruddha?
You said that one has to come to the platform of the mode of goodness before he can effectively perform devotional service.
Pure devotional service. Not effectively. Before he can perform pure devotional service.
Which is any... So here it says, one who engages in full devotional service. So... That indicates then that the devotee he may be performing some activity, but it's not really
pure devotional service. It's pure made, you can't perform, there's no such thing as impure devotional service. You can't offer something to Krishna unless it's pure. But by the mercy of the spiritual master, he's accepting our impure, contaminated devotional service. Everything that we do is mixed with the mode of passion, goodness, ignorance, and false ego. He's accepting that, and by his purity, passing through his hand, he's offering it to Krishna. But so we say we're aspiring devotees. We're not Vaishnavas. We're aspiring to be Vaishnavas.
So one may be criticized in the mode of goodness because he's not doing enough.
But the one in the mode of goodness, if he's contaminated by the mode of goodness, maybe he won't be doing enough. But we're not talking about the mode of goodness as an end in itself, but the mode of goodness is the platform on which pure devotional service, the jumping off platform, as we used to call it, the pure devotional service. This essay explains it. So if there's, read it tonight. And if there's any questions about it, ask it tomorrow.
I've heard a distinction made between mental speculation and philosophical speculation. The philosophical speculation basically means that we're trying to understand Krishna, which I understand, what's the Prabhupada's books, and that's what the gentleman is probably here.
Yeah.
And the mental speculation is it's fraught with doubt.
Well, I would say my understanding of it is that speculation in this sense means the use of intelligence to understand the philosophy.
Yes.
The philosophy is already given, and we're trying to understand it through the use of our intelligence. 100% acceptable, practically unavoidable. It's our duty to do that. We say that the mental speculation is rejected means that as a process to understand the absolute truth in and of itself. One cannot get out of this trap, the encasement, by his own powers. But using the intelligence to understand the descending philosophy is way beyond that, because the truth is descending and we're trying to understand it.
So therefore that's what fills out the speculation.
Yeah, Prabhupada said something bona fide. It means using your intelligence to understand what's going on. Try and not do it. Or to speak of it being legitimate, try and not do it.
There's another question. This is you brought up a practical point, and so I wanted to ask you a little bit about this. Srila Prabhupada wrote one famous letter where he suggested that the devotees use the same sales techniques that materialists are using, which are basically in the mode of passion. But then if we follow your description that we execute both distributions, can we also use those sales techniques even though they're developed in the mode of passion and designed to work in the mode of passion and we use some ignorance? Can we still use those?
But then perfect them. Yeah, probably, but you have to be careful. When dealing with the material energy, one always has to be careful. For instance, you could set up big charts and crank people up, with big quotas, etc., etc. And it may have only short-term results.
Well, put it this way: if one is using the cleverness of sales techniques, but it's not true.
But I don't see why that, by definition, means the mode of passion.
Because the desire in many cases is to make the customer feel satisfied with the product that they've got and fulfilling their needs. So we know Krishna consciousness is fulfilling their needs and that they'll be happy and satisfied with the product. So therefore, it's the motivation in that sense when it's used in Krishna consciousness, it's not the motivation.
Yeah, you create a need in the person that's a salesperson.
But Maya has already created the need from these people because they need Krishna, otherwise they're doomed. Hi, well, Sava. How are you today?
All right, just waiting for you.
Oh, okay. We have just another minute or so.
So, one other quick question. I still don't really, after going through the whole chapter, I don't really understand why this is superior knowledge.
Well, what did Prabhupada say about that? It says that right in the beginning, in that first purport we read. Yeah, in a better way, because it's a better way to transcend, and that in that sense superior.
Better because it gives you real detail.
Well, not only that, but it's explaining. Look at the paths. Bhakti is so much more clearly explained here as the process of transcending, the jnana path. Look at that process of knowledge from chapter 13. That's tough. You got a secluded place again. You got to practice jnana yoga. But here, mam tiyo vachana bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatidyaitan. Just by rendering devotional service, you transcend. Pure devotional service, one transcends the modes of material nature. So let's bring that question to the point of what are three ways mentioned for transcending here in that last, just in that brief last section of 19 through 27. Let's see if I have actually three, but just one. What's one way of transcending?
Well,
27 is
Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is Devate. That's one way. Another way. Lauda. Where is that mentioned? Huh? No, it's in all in this last section. 21 through
25.
So what is it? What is the way? That's cultivation of... What? That, anyway, I see that one as one in verse 19. He knows the Supreme Lord and knows that everything, all the whole material world is controlled by the modes of material nature, and Krishna is transcendental. He's not controlled by it.